Jebi ga. Komplicira se.
Unikompleks. Oddaja, v kateri razgaljamo že povsem razgaljeno in tako imenovano odprto univerzo in nje tegobe.
Tveganje in nezaželene učinke rešujte samoorganiziranjem in sindikalnim delovanjem.
Mehiški klopčiči. V današnji oddaji univerzitetnikov bomo razmotavali štirene kompleksnih vozlov Latinske Amerike, natančneje Mehike. Želja tovrstnega poskusa se je porodila ob nedavnih dogodkih poboja 43 študentov Ruralne pedagoške fakultete v zvezni državi Guerrero. Ne glede na to, da so domači in tuji mediji radi poročali o tovrstni senzaciji, smo sumničavo verjeli, da je med medijsko zgodbo in realnostjo Mehike lahko velika diskrepanca. Zato smo se odločili, da se pogovorimo z nekaterimi posamezniki, ki so bili ali pa še vedno so tam. Prvi teh je bivši tuji poročevalec iz Latinske Amerike za Delo, Tone Hočevar.
To se dogaja v državi Guerrero, tam pri Acapulco. Ne vem, če se dogaja v Acapulco. Acapulco je čudovita plaža, plaže za milijonarje in milijarderje. Milijonskimi naselji, torej pod naselji, kjer živi na milijone revežev.
Kot smo že poročali, je 23. septembra policija na ukaz lokalne vlade zasegla avtobus poln študentov, ki so se odpravljali na protesti shod ob javnem govoru županove žene. Ob konfrontaciji protestnikov in opresivnih organov so 6 študentov ustrelili na mestu, ostalih 43 pa odpeljali neznano kam. Izginula skupina je od tam predvidoma romala naravnost v smrt, saj naj bi jih skorumpirana policija predala lokalnemu narkokartelu. Zgodbo nam je osvetlil tudi lokalni poznavalec Mehičan Rodrigo Figueroa.
Guerrero, which is a state, as you probably already know, that is not because of their guerrillas and the That's a very revolutionary state, actually. There was this protest, and this educators, this teacher's school, is very famous for having a lot of revolutionary people in there. So they were organizing, and they were actually questioning constantly what was going on with their governor and the municipal president of their city, and as well with the president of the whole country. And students protest. The police goes, the army goes there, and they clash with the protesters, and therefore 6 of them died, and many others, 43 actually, disappear, and we don't know what happened to them.
Kljub temu, da so oblasti prijele 3 osumljence, ki naj bi zločin priznali, trupel še vedno niso odkrili. Mediji so poročali o odkritju nekakšnega množičnega grobišča z napol kremiranimi človeškimi ostanki. Ta zgodba bo lahko potrjena ali zavržena šele po dolgotrajnem procesiranju forenzičnih preiskav. Drugi mehiški sogovornik, Jose Alberto Moreno Chavez, pa ob tem pove.
Ayotzinapa has been a very mediatic case. No, but it's very common that we have those killings and massacres in Mexico daily. Many of them, they only create protest in a local way. No, they don't present to the national media.
Za razumevanje aktualnih dogodkov bomo v oddaji poskušali osvetliti širši kontekst protislovij te države, ki je razpeta med lokalne, državne in mednarodne korupcijske posle. Klopčič bomo začeli razvijati pri prepletenih rovih narkokartelov, politike in preko njih vzpostavljenega sistema nacionalne ekonomije. Skozi njo se pretaka in jo vzpostavlja praktično vse, kar se lahko zamislimo pod besedo ilegalno. Od droge, orožja, človeških organov, tihotapljenja ljudi, prostitucije, suženstva pa do naročenih umorov in podobnih pljačk. Da pa bi ta klopčič lahko začeli razpletati, bomo začeli z branjem mehiške politične zgodovine 20. stoletja, z 71-letno vladavino institucionalne revolucionarne stranke ali z angleško kratico stranke PRI. Ta na prvi pogled levičarska stranka je leta 1929 končala brez vladje, ki je zevalo vse od spodletele mehiške revolucije in se obdržala na oblasti vse do leta 2000. Toda njeno genealogijo je potrebno konzistentno osvetliti skozi prizmo nacionalne ekonomije, produkcijo in tihotapljena drog. Zato kar prisluhnimo, kateri razlogi so sobotrovali nastanku zloglasnim in danes neobvladljivim narkokartelom. Govori Jose Alberto.
The drugs were sent to the United States and they found this counter-guerrilla movement financed by drugs. Very as a very proper manner to make business to the United States. First, the Mexican government creating those cartels and those cartels / counter guerrillas to fight the local guerrillas and all those movements financed by the CIA. Since the 70s, when they finished the Cold War in the 80s, especially in Mexico. We have the problem that what have to do with the cartels. So President Reagan in the 80s began the war against drugs in the United States. The problem was we can't finish this unofficial deal. First, because it was an excellent business, and second, because they were fighting against communists in Mexico. No, so the American government. He tried to make a new deal with all those cartels. So, with the Mexican government, they made these four strong cartels, and they divide the Mexican government in these four cartels. The cartels began part of the economical system of Mexico, but they were under the rule of the PRI.
Tak politično narkokartelni red stranke PRI je veljal vsaj do leta 2000, ko se je po 71 letih zamenjala oblast. Tako je prvič v zgodovini prišla na oblast stranka nacionalne akcije, ki je vladala naslednja dva mandata do leta 2012. Kot njen prvi predsednik je zaprisegel bivši biznismen Vincente Fox, ki je imel kot mož izkušen do posla nekoliko drugačen pristop. Poslušajmo.
Since 2002, without the PRI and without the former agreements, the cartels began really powerful. And especially was because President Fox, he was not very interested to make deals, political deals with the cartels. He was interested to make economical deals with the cartels, but not political. So, without a central government or the central power of the president, the drug cartels, they were open to make business with local politicians and local parties. So since then we have this very complicated geography of drug cartels, big drug cartels, small drug cartels, and local drug cartels who are financing political careers and local politicians.
Če torej pogledamo iz širše ekonomske perspektive, ugotovimo, da se skozi glavno nacionalno panogo drog postopoma vedno bolj uveljavlja prevladujoča težnja neoliberalizma. Njeno konkretno udejanjenje v tem smislu sopada ravno z mandatom Vincenta Foxa.
We have an evolution of the economy in the 80s and 90s. We have a strong financial crisis in 82 that provokes a change from a welfare state to a neoliberal economy. And in this transition, in this economical transition, the drug smuggling and the drug cartels began to take a lot of power, no? In part thanks to the government, and by the 90s and early 2000s, we can perceive this changing of economy, especially in the way that the politic change in Mexico.
Leta 2006 se je na predsedniških volitvah uspela obdržati stranka nacionalne akcije, tokrat s predsednikom Felipom Calderonom. Ker pa je konkurenca na prostem trgu narkokartelov sprožila njihova medsebojna obračunavanja in nasilje, se je Calderon odločil ukrepati in sprožil tako imenovano vojno proti drogam.
In 2006, government decided to fight against three or four cartels, the cartel of the Gulf, the cartel of Jalisco and the cartel of Juarez and another cartel that of course the Zetas, the Ciras, and he make an agreement with the cartel of the Pacific ruled by, probably you've heard about it, the Chapo Guzman. The struggle create an imbalance between the old cartels because since the 80s to the 2006, all the cartels, they have their own territories, no? The Pacific cartel has the Pacific, the Gulf has the Gulf, etc. So, since the 2006, it was a war from the Pacific cartel against the other cartels and the government supporting this struggle from the Pacific cartel against the other cartels.
Tako vidimo, da povezava politike in narkokartelov, ki poganja celotno mehiško ekonomijo, ni ravno enostavna, pač pa jako zakomplicirana zadeva. Zato za kratek premislek sledi vmesni komad.
No.
Tako leto 1929 nastopi obdobje nam... Se opravičujemo za tehnično napako in nadaljujemo. Vseeno pa se moramo zavedati, da Mehika in njena zgodovina niso samo narkokarteli in droge. Prav obratno, na začetku prejšnjega stoletja je država 30 letja vladal diktator Porfirio Diaz, ki je oblast vzel z vojaškim udarom leta 1867. No, vsaj dokler ni leta 1910 nastopila mehiška revolucija, ki je, vsaj v svojem kmečkem jedru, trajala dolgih 10 let in na koncu ni uspela.
So in 1910, a revolution began, and the supplies and the arms, the weapons for this revolution were supplied by the United States, because they supported the revolution. So the problem, well, one of the problems was there were many people involved in this revolution. So the leader, we could say, during the first years, was Francisco I. Madero. He eventually became president of Mexico. But the problem was that there were many, many groups involved. So there were anarchists involved. There were landlords from northern Mexico involved. And there was no clear ideological process at the very beginning of the revolution. So Madero became the president, and that began a series of killings of presidents. So there was not a democratic Mexico in that very moment, or many years after that, for that matter. But the way that they settled their differences was by killing each other. Different groups wanted to impose their people, wanted to impose their leaders, so they killed the other leaders of other factions, of other parties. So this president was killed, and then another came, and after that one, another came. And we had two different fronts in this constant conflict that lasted for 10 years. The northern conflict, the northern movements that were led basically by landlords, that they were like the medium class. And in the south, there were like peasants. These peasants led by Emiliano Zapata they were farmers, they were peasants, so they were actually very poor. And they had a pretty left-wing point of view, and they have some kind of ideology, we can say that. So all these groups kept fighting over and over for 10 years. And then when Pancho Villa in the north, which was one of the popular movements of the lower classes, and Zapata were killed, the revolution started a moment in which they wanted to pacify all the groups that kept fighting, because there was already a precedent, even though precedents kept killing each other over and over. But there was a precedent, and there was someone, in the office leading Mexico. So they wanted to pacify all these groups. So the first thing they did was to let the army out and pacify all these people, but it didn't work. The army was not strong enough to pacify multiple groups all over the country, because, well, Mexico is a huge country, basically. So it was very difficult to have the army leading with all these different groups in different states, in different cities. So what they did at some point was to include them. So and this is the most important part of the revolution with Lázaro Cárdenas. So this president Lázaro Cárdenas and the one before him tried to incorporate the leftist ideology.
Tako v letu 1929 nastopi obdobje nam že znane institucionalne revolucionarne stranke PRI, katere najpomembnejša združevalna figura je bil predsednik Lázaro Cárdenas. Cárdenas je zaslužen predvsem za centralizacijo oblasti, poleg tega pa je v svojem političnem mandatu speljal tudi socialistične projekte, kot so nacionalizacija naftne industrije, zemlje in železnice. Zaslužen je tudi za ustanavljanje šol in normalk, kot je tista v Ajačinapi. S svojimi socialističnimi projekti je Cárdenas položil osnovo, na kateri je stranka PRI nadaljnih 60 let gradila identiteto Mehike kot porojene iz pepelke mehiške revolucije. In to kljub temu, da je stranka PRI ves čas svoje oblasti pridno menjala obraze.
So this party became the most important and the most prominent party in Mexico, and every single year after it was created there were claims of electoral fraud. But and everybody knew what was going on, and there was electoral fraud indeed, and there was claims of electoral fraud during Peña Nieto's election and so on. But what this party did is that they put whomever they wanted in the right positions so that they could control the country. Now this party it's a chameleonic kind of party because. Sometimes it's a very left-wing party, as when with Lázaro Cárdenas, who nationalized oil and helped the workers and made a lot of unions. And this very same party, which is supposed to be central kind of party, nowadays is, and since the 1980s, they have been privatizing everything. So it shifts from time to time. In its political spectrum and where is it standing.
Tako lahko skozi zgodovino stranke PRI vidimo njen modus operandi, kako je iz ruševin spodletele kmečke revolucije gradila nacionalno identiteto države. A to nas, kot pravi Jose Alberto, ne sme zavesti.
We have an imaginary around the Mexican Revolution. When you're going to elementary school, since elementary school to university, you believe that all the institutions and all the government programs came from the revolution. But that's a lie. No, that's a lie that built the PRI during the 20th century. If we had a revolution since 1910 to around 1917, those movement was already dead by the mid of the 20s. The Mexican Revolution was a strongly an pacing movement. No, they want the return of the land, no, the return of the communitarian lands. And in fact, if they were the main issue in the constitution, around the lands and the pacing politics were built a whole system of a political exploitation since the 20th till today. So in the discourse, we are the heirs of this revolution, but in fact, we are not. The PRI, the Nationalist Party, and the left, they always go to the past and bring this discourse, this historical discourse, at it was in the present. But it isn't. No, we have other problems that we don't have in 1910.
Será. respeto.
Prek ekonomsko-politične kronologije zdaj nekoliko lažje razumemo današnje nastale razmere v tamkajšnjem sistemu in nezadovoljstvu ljudstva nad tem. Cárdenas je tako s svojimi socialističnimi reformami z ustanavljanjem novih državnih inštitucij in sindikatov deklarativno opolnomočil ljudstvo. Seveda pa politika ne bi tako samovoljno spustila roke nad sistemom. Oblast in nadzor sta ostala centralizirana tudi preko sindikatov. Rodrigo nadalje razloži.
The problem here is that these unions were created by the government, and therefore the government put their people in strategic positions, so to control the workers. So certainly the workers got many rights, and they fought many battles that they won, and their well-being increased by much during these years. But the problem was that the unions become intervened. So whenever the workers had a grievance with the state, that was a big, big problem, because there was nobody to help them. When they had a grievance with private capital, with the owners of the companies, the state would help them. But otherwise, when it came to the state, they were helpless. So the problem was that they tried to pacify everybody. And therefore, when they created the Constitution of 1917 for the Mexican state, it was a quite centralized constitution, which gave the central power, the federal power, any kinds of rights over local powers, over state governors, and so on. And therefore, nowadays, Mexico is a quite centralized country in which everything relies on the president and his power, and not on the different states. We suppose, or theoretically, Mexico is a federation. Therefore, states should have more power, but they actually don't have that kind of power.
Tovrstna centralizacija nadzora vlade nad sindikati seveda zelo zamaje možnost kvalitetnega delovanja sindikatov prid njihovih članov. To pa nas privede do aktualne šolske reforme, ki je v letu 2012 z nastopom mandata začel sedanji predsednik Enrique Peña Nieto. Ta šolska reforma služi kot povod za razvoj dogodkov v državi od zadnjega leta do današnjega dne. Podrobnosti reforme razloži Rodrigo.
Peña Nieto has been doing during the first 2 years of his time in office, he has been doing a lot of reforms. All of these reforms follow the very same line that all the people before him as president created. So it is basically a neoliberal model, which is shaped after the Chicago School model of economics. So what he's trying to do is to privatize basically everything. Right, so one of the things he wants to privatize, well, obviously the oil, which is Mexico's most important wealth source, but also education. So by privatizing education, he releases the government from that responsibility, and it's always been a government's responsibility to provide education to the people. So in Mexico, education is free from the very first years until you get your bachelor's degree. So now with this reform, he's trying to do two things. Number one, well, privatize education. So the parents of the children will have to pay for all the expenses of the school, right? So usually what they did was that the government distributed wealth amongst different schools. So if I had a very rich school that paid a lot of taxes in Mexico City, and they're not going to use that money, the government sends that money to a rural school, and therefore they can keep going, even though they don't have a lot of students or they don't have or they don't pay a lot of taxes because they are very poor. So this could be done, and because of that model, which was created by his party back in the 1920s and 1930s. So Ayotzinapa is one of those schools which is basically almost free, and they tried to create teachers for all the rural areas, teachers that were from the community, not outsiders, but people in the community working and educating for the community. So now the teachers and parents will have to pay for the expenses of the school. And if it's in a poor area, they are not going to be able to fund that school, and the school is going to close. And many schools have closed so far in Mexico. The other very important thing that this reform had is, as we were talking about the unions, and there are two. Lázaro Cárdenas created one teachers union, and this teachers union was intervened by the government. The president of the union was put in that position by the government, and so on, and they could control teachers and they could control students by means of this union. Later on, another branch from this union sprang, and this other union is contesting the original union, right? So what they are trying to do is to intervene in a deeper way in the unions, and so that they can put whatever teachers they want to, not those who go through an exam and they prove that they know and that they are able to teach, but those who the government consider us friendly with a regime, right?
Aktualni protesti so zgolj eskalacija že dolgotrajnih protestov učiteljev proti napovedani reformi. Ob incidentu poboja nekaterih in izgnotju ostalih 43 študentov, ki so se odpravljali na enega izmed teh dogodkov, pa so se protesti razplamteli po celi državi in zajeli precej širši okvir vse splošne družbeno-ekonomske krize državnega sistema. Na ulici je tako opaziti barvit spekter glasov. Heterogeno protestniško situacijo Jose Alberto v grobem deli na dva dela.
We have two separate movements. The first one is social and civical movement that they claim for justice, not only for the Ayotzinapa's students. They also ask for justice for all the victims of the war against drugs. No, you know that the last president, Leon, began a drug war or a war against the cartels in 2006. Well, we don't have the official numbers of the death, but since 2006 till today, probably there are 100,000 dead people. Among them are 25,000 disappeared, you know? So we have, for one part, this movement, which has been very active since, I don't remember, since 2009 or 2008. And we have this other movement in the state of Guerrero, who is very local, you know? And it's a movement by the teachers, who are controlled by one of the two unions.
Tako od septembra dalje potekajo mehiški protesti, preko katerih ljudstvo opozarja na ekonomsko-politični problem njihove države. Ob tem pa so glasovi in zahteve množice različni. Ob aktualnih dogodkih pa danes v Mehiki praznujejo 104. obletnico mehiške revolucije, ki jo bodo mnogi preživeli jezno, v napovedani vsesplošni stavki. Ob tem gre omeniti še sobotni incident na mehiški nacionalni avtonomni univerzi UNAM v Mexico Cityju, kjer je policija nasilno intervenirala organizacijski shod študentov v pripravah na današnji dan. Uradni izjavi so trdili, da je bila njihova prisotnost na kraju upravičena s preiskovanjem primera ukradenega telefona, kar je seveda v danem kontekstu absurdno. Medtem, ko policija išče ukradene telefone, svojci 43 izginulih tavajo v temi nepojasnenih dogodkov. Zgodbe ostalih medijev o skorumpirani policiji, vojski in vladi ter sodelovanju teh z narkokarteli sta potrdila tudi lokalna sogovornika. Tamkajšnji oblastniki so naročili policiji eliminacijsko predajo žrtev lokalnim narkokartelom. Zaključek zgodbe ostaje neznan, saj brez potrjene verifikacije DNK domnevno kremiranih trupel ni umora. O stanju opisanega 14. klopčiča ekonomske politike Mehike veliko pove tudi dejstvo, da se je ob nastalem izrednem stanju v državi predsednik Peña Nieto kratkočasil v Aziji. Mehiška politika, ne glede na barvo oblasti, tako na svoj lokalno specifičen način opravlja svoje posle as usual in hkrati brezbrižno sledi svetovnim smernicam razprodaje državnega. Mediji pa se še naprej ukvarjajo s trači. Nekaj tovrstnih cvet, ki je z nami delil Marko Jensterle.
Pač neka dvojna igra vlade, zdaj, ko sem že prej povedal predsednik neki Peña Nieto, je recimo v času, ko je prišlo do tega problema, ne, je on mirno odšel na Kitajsko, on ni na kraj pameti prišlo, da bi odpovedal obisk in hkrati s tem konfliktom v Ajočinapi so prišli na dan tudi vesti o tem, kako recimo on in njegova pač žena, ta druga žena, neka igralka v telenovelah, živita v hiši vredni 7 milijonov dolarjev in ko so hčerko te žene, druge žene vprašali, kaj ona mislila o tem konfliktu, je bila ravno nekem tekmovanju, dobila nagrado kot neko osebnost televizijska in je rekla, da pač v tem trenutku je pomembnejše, da ona dobije nagrado, kot da se izvješnjuje. Tako da to kaže na ta razkorak med v realnosti, ne? In tudi recimo predsedniku so našli, da je, ko je bil še predtem guverner neke države, da je to njegovo vilo, stanovanje, ne, je gradilo podjetje, ki je dobilo koncesijo za hitro železnico, za gradno hitro železnico, mislim, da je med Ciudad de Mexico in nekim mestom, zdaj se ne spomnim, ker ampak hočem reči, da to je prepleteno, to je res vrh države je prepleten s korupcijo in tam v bistvu tudi pravi zdaj, da je politika odpovedala na celi črti, politiki so osovraženi ljudje, hkrati pa ni nobene vizije alternative.
Politični oblastniki in narkolordi v svoji deklarirani vojni služijo denarce, medtem pa se, kot v vsaki vojni, žrtveni davek terja med civilnim prebivalstvom. Drugeraška ekonomija Mehike je paradoksno legitimirana tudi strani mnogih državljanov, saj so posredno ali neposredno v njo opleteni in jim tako predstavlja socialno varnost oziroma vir preživetja. Narkolordi se tako na lokalni ravni transformirajo iz kriminalcev v heroje, opevane v glasbi vaških veselic. Zgodba izginotja in domnevnega poboja študentov iz Ajačinape bo tako po vsej verjetnosti le še eden tistih koščkov zgodovine pozabljenih desparesidosov, ki zakopani, zažgani, upepeljeni ležijo na vesti tistih, ki jih pozabljamo. V šizofreni mnogoznačnosti Mehike sta se skušali znajti Maruša in Teja.
Stimulativnih razmerah. V razmerah, v katerih nimajo nobene zanesljivosti, nobene varnosti. Lejte, kaj se lahko zgodi v takem sistemu? Pa tudi recimo pri profesorjih kasneje. Ne? Lahko se zgodi to, da se začne cel sistem obnašati neracionalno.